Derek Gilmore joins us on Sports Byline. He's a successful and well-respected sports agent and CEO of Day One Sports and Entertainment. I know, Derek, that you grew up in New York in the Bronx. Tell me a little bit about growing up there at that time.
Well, you know, back in the 80s, New York was a little bit different. There was a transition at that time in the city. You know, I was in Roosevelt Island where I grew up. I actually grew up with a bunch of people who went on to go into the sports industry. And it was a lot different. You know, it was more of a concrete jungle. You know, you look around today, and, you know, my kids, they go to big high schools with big fields that are like stadiums. You know, my high school, you went outside, you had to pick up glass on the field to make sure that there was no sharp objects out on the, you know, that was basically a concrete thing that had a little bit of grass on it, and that was your field. We actually played at a different school. We played at DeWitt Clinton was our games. You know, I think Cardinal Hayes, where I went now, has a big turf field, so a lot different.
You know, one of the things I've heard from athletes, no matter what the sport is, when I talk to them, when they grew up in an urban area, is that the athletes in those urban areas that were pretty good, it was recognized really quickly, and they were somewhat protected by all the elements in an urban environment. Did you find it that way?
Yeah, I did. You know, your friends wanted you definitely, you know, I had friends who maybe did some of the wrong things. And really, you know, I was one of those guys who probably wasn't going to do it anyway, but, you know, they would have definitely tried to keep me away from it. And it's just one of those things where I guess I never really looked at it, but I guess that is true really to nature, where there was kind of a protection around you to kind of go, and people saw you doing something positive, and they want you to, you know, to succeed.
You obviously were a talented athlete in high school, and I loved your quote, "I really didn't have an understanding of the recruiting process." What was that like for you?
Well, I remember, you know, college sports wasn't really big in New York City at the time. Like, I mean, we followed the Giants and the Jets and the, you know, Knicks and all those kind of things, Yankees, of course, and the Mets. But, I didn't really know. My mom was, you know, college was going to be important. I was going to go to college. And my brother was like, hey, you know, my mom wanted me to go to Notre Dame, really. And I was like, I don't see a letter here. You know, I'm missing something. And St. John's was recruiting us heavy and different schools. And I got seen by accident in an All-Star game by Penn State. And, you know, it was just fortunate. That's how I ended up going to Penn State. I remember them having interest, and my mom and I went down there for a visit, and everybody was nice. I didn't, you know, it was my first time being on a college campus, and I was just like, wow. And, you know, I decided to go there. It just changed my life.
You know, when you think about the recruiting process, it was a simpler time. You're absolutely right. And, of course, we hear the war stories, good and bad, about what happens with recruiting today. And I'm just wondering, what made it change to what it is today?
I just think, you know, back in the day, you know, when you had, you know, more scholarships and there was, you know, everybody, when I was, you know, my time at Penn State, I think, you know, everybody wanted to go to Penn State, and there wasn't, you know, I think, you had, you know, I think I can't remember how many scholarships they had, but basically, you know, you'd have 90 top players there, and everybody wanted to be there, so it was very competitive. Now, you know, with less scholarships, you know, people go to, you know, that's how Oregon kind of came up when I coached to Oregon, because, you know, everybody can't go to USC on the West Coast, so now they're able, you know, to get talent that they wouldn't normally get, and I think that's probably the biggest change, where they basically plateaued and made a more equal playing field for others.
Tell me about the first time you met Joe Paterno.
First time I met was just on our visit, and he just came out. He sat down and told my mom, he talked about New York and the Bronx, and he grew up in Brooklyn, and I think he told that story every year. He grew up, he would just tell us how he grew up in Brooklyn and how they would play Cardinal Hayes, and how, you know, he told my mom I was going to get the education, and that's all it was about. That's all I really remember, you know?
I thought it was interesting when you said, despite the fact that there were a lot of kids from Staten Island and New York City, that area, that some of your roommates had never been around black people before they got to college.
Yeah, one of my dear friends, I hope I don't get his name, I mean, he won't get mad, but my buddy Tim Gerhart, who's from a place called Williamsport, Pennsylvania, where they said the Little League Hall of Fame. And I remember him telling me the story, he's like, I was like, are you telling me you've never seen, like, physically seen a black person? And he's like, well, they, like, on the other side of the field, but they had their helmets on. He had never really actually talked to someone, you know, and I was just blew my mind, you know. We're different even today.
Yeah, tell me a little bit about what Camille, what you asked Camille for on your hamburger.
Well, I think the common theme was, after, I don't even remember what she ordered, but we both said Coke with no ice, you know. I don't know, we were both cheap, and we were just trying to get, but the guy kind of looked at us on the counter, and we looked across at each other, and we were just like, you know, hey, you know, he kind of introduced us, and she was asking where we were going, and you're like, hey, we're going to a party, you should come. But that was our little magical moment, which we always laugh about.
Yeah, and after a couple of years of dating, you got married. Let me ask you, how good was that Penn State team that went undefeated and defeated Miami in the 87 Fiesta Bowl to win the national championship?
I think, you know, it's so funny. You know, I look at teams that are top talent now, and I think we were really tough. I mean, we had so much depth. I mean, I remember people think that, you know, that Miami team was phenomenal. You look at all their talent. But we had a lot of talent, a lot of hard-nosed guys, you know, and I think we would beat a lot of teams just because I think we would have been well-prepared. We didn't, you know, we were well-disciplined. We wouldn't have beat ourselves, you know, and I think that's one of the reasons why we went undefeated that year, you know, but I think there may be some a lot, you know, better athletes probably around the world if you look at some of these teams now, just the way people have evolved and training off field and training during the off season. But I think our team was a special team because we had great chemistry. I mean, we from the seniors to when I was a freshman on that team, like they looked out for me. They you know, helped cultivate your experience and wanted to see you grow and be great on and off the field.
I thought it was interesting. After you graduated, you decided immediately you wanted to be in coaching, and you got on Lou Tepper's staff at the University of Illinois. That decision to become a coach, I've often wondered why kids make it. I mean, is it something that happened to them during their course of playing football, somebody that inspired them to do so? What was it in your case, Derek?
For me, you know, there's a little bit of two things. Part of it was love. I remember I was trying to – I actually first was going to go to University of Chicago to go get my MBA. And when I went to go out there, they were like, oh, we let you have a little bit more, you know, academic work. So I kind of was like, well, my wife was already going to be moving to Chicago, which is one of the reasons why I looked at that. So I was like, well, what about University of Illinois? And then that's how I kind of decided to make my choice to go out there to get my master's. And then I was like, well, let me go ahead and just get into this coaching business. And then I kind of started in I kind of took a crazy route where I started in ticketing, and then I got into marketing and then coaching and evidently the football operations. And I just loved it. And it was a kind of a crazy twist and turns, but everything I did taught me something else and created another opportunity.
You went on then to the University of Oregon. Were you considering making that a career as a coach?
You know, when I went to – I just, you know – I loved Oregon. I had never even been to Oregon. I remember talking to Mike Bellotti. It was the weirdest interview of my life. And I remember him calling me up because I'd seen the job. And he said, you know, Derek, I think I have my staff, but I want us to be friends. Call me. I'm going to call you on Monday. I'm going to go play golf, but I'm going to call you back on Monday. And I'm thinking, I have enough friends. Why are you calling me? And he calls me back and he says, I want you on your staff. Let's create a position for you. And the rest was history, and we just kind of changed the way we did recruiting at Oregon.
Well, I know that doing play-by-play here on the West Coast, I've done a number of games up at the University of Oregon, and it was the only place I found that they had a Chinese restaurant that was also a discotheque. It was called Foods.
Yes, I know exactly what you're talking about. I know exactly what you're talking about. Oregon is a real unique, wonderful place. You know, the bed and breakfast is just a – I remember when my wife first came there, and I think one of the reasons she was, like, I'm scared to move to the Northwest. And when she came into off the plane, I gave her a bunch of calla lilies. And she said, did you buy these? They're too expensive. And I said, honey, they're growing in our backyard. So Oregon is just a wonderful place.
We're talking about the life and the career of Derek Gilmore. He's a very successful and well-respected sports agent and CEO of Day One Sports and Entertainment. And when we come back on the other side, we're going to talk about the agent business, because it's one that's very interesting. And if you take a look around professional football, professional basketball in particular, it's dominated by African-American athletes. And so we're going to talk about Derek, because one of the things that he has done is not just negotiate contracts for athletes in their various sports, but he also is very concerned about what happens to them after they finish playing their sport. We'll get into that as well. We've got you on America's Sports Talk Show, Sports Byline. Derek Gilmore has joined us here on Sports Byline. As I said before, he is an agent, a successful one, well-respected too, and CEO of Day One Sports and Entertainment. After you left Oregon, Camille got a job in Atlanta, and you both had always agreed that whoever, you know, got a job that was well worth it, you'd go together. But you got down to Atlanta, and you didn't find anything open in coaching. Tell me about the process, the thought process of thinking about going to something else like representing athletes.
I've always been kind of moved by my faith. When I left Oregon, I was hoping to get with two places, either University of Georgia. I had actually met Mark Richt at an FCA event, and there was a chance that his football operations guy would be leaving. There might be room on his staff. And then the other opportunity was with the Atlanta Falcons. And I went down here, and I had met with the Falcons staff and met with people, and to the point where we felt so comfortable about one of those two jobs that we built our house right here in Sewanee. So things happened. There were some crazy twists and turns, and the opportunity didn't come up. And then I was just like, kind of, what am I going to do? I have an MBA, but my wife had a great opportunity, so we really weren't worried about money per se. And then I had so many people reaching out to me saying, you should be an agent, you should be an agent. And I remember when I was at Oregon and at Illinois, my job was to help players with the agent process, make sure that they were prepared and made good choices. So I knew the agents who were good, who were bad, those who would take calls, those that took care of their clients. So when I had a chance, you know, when Mike McCartney reached out to me, who I had known for years, and I respected him when he was, you know, he was on the NFL with the Eagles, and I remember him in personnel, and, you know, I got to know all the scouts when they would come by, and I would get to know all the agents, and everybody would kind of go through us. So I knew, you know, I the time coaching allowed me to make a lot of relationships that would go on and benefit me in my agent career, because those guys were scouts. I remember Jerry Angelo coming in when he was just a young buck, talking to me about a player. And I remember John Schneider coming in, and those guys went on to be GM. So, you know, it's funny. You develop good relationships. But when I was looking around, you know, Mike kind of talked to me about Priority Sports, and I liked the way they did their business. They always did things in a first-class way, which is the way I want to operate. And, you know, I want to be – my boys were little. My boys Dante and Dion, who are now – in high school and in college, and my son Dion's about to go to college. I remember saying I wanted to be there, you know, the last, you know, 12 years, 13 years, to help raise them, to coach them, to be involved in their life. So the opportunity to be an agent and really be kind of a stay-at-home dad, it was a great fit because it allowed me to work, allowed my wife to travel and do her job, and she's a powerhouse. And really helped us, you know, with our family life.
Yeah, there's another aspect, too. You had a great role model in one of your teammates at Penn State, Shane Conlon. And tell me a little bit about him and what you saw in him that really influenced you as well as you transitioned into agenting.
I remember when Shane was, you know, Shane was one of the top players in the draft that year. And should, you know, could have been a Hall of Famer probably if they would have won those four Super Bowls instead of lost them. But I remember Shane saying to me, I saw him in this blue beat-up car like the one Nick Nolte had in 48 Hours. And I kept thinking, why doesn't he have a new ride? You know, I would have had something really hot. And he was just like, you know, I've been poor all my life. I can be poor a couple more months. And it's just kind of like I wanted to have that my guys to have that kind of impact and thought process. And a lot of them don't because they didn't have the family structure and background. And, you know, another person who was really influential who I never met was Tiki Barber and I remember Tiki, I remember thinking whoever his agent was, they did a good job because they had a great plan for him to leave football and then have a plan to go into radio and television broadcast afterwards. So that was always kind of my goal, you know, looking at those type of guys and making sure that with my guys, if I got into this business, making sure that they had a plan for life after football.
Yeah, one of the things, too, that you noticed about Conlon was the fact that he resisted overtures of agents that tried to shower him with cash and gifts. And, look, I've been around a long time doing sports, and the late Bob Wolf was my agent. He did Larry Bird and a lot of the Boston Red Sox. So I know the story about representing athletes. It was a slimy, slimy business at one time, and I think that it's moved in the right direction. Where did that discipline come from that changed it?
I don't know. I think there's still issues at times. I think players make decisions for the wrong reasons at times. I think when you look at what's happening in the industry, you know, the youth right now, we start when they're in middle school. And I just saw an article of an eighth grader who benches 300-something pounds. And there's a picture of, you know, Urban Meyer trying to go see this kid and shaking his hand. And it's like they start off when they're so young, and we you know, make them celebrities. And then with the Instagram and social media, you know, and then basically when they have these signing days and we reward it and anoint it and make them stars, there's a level of expectation when they get to the level when they're at, you know, I'm getting ready to sign with a, you know, to the NFL team, they have an expectation of being treated like these superstars. And, you know, because they're in that anointed fashion, I think that they have a different mindset than of guys they had back in the day. So for me, you know, when I'm looking at a player, I always just try to say to myself, let me get a player who really has the same values that I have and that guys that I respect to have, like Shane back in the day, that are willing to do it the right way, are not looking for a handout, and want someone who's going to work their tail off every single day. One thing I always tell players is I can only make you one promise, that there's going to be good times, there's going to be bad times, and I'm going to be there for them both.
I thought it was interesting, your quote, I just tell players that are potential clients that this is about your life and having good representation. It's about having a plan after football, things that come quick and easy. They may look good and taste good, but eventually they aren't good for you. It's about looking at the big picture. Now, the question I would have here is that, you know, when you're 22 years old, you're coming out of college, maybe you're coming out even early. If you're a basketball player, after one year, they're inundated with people saying, I can do this, I can do that for you. Right. How are they supposed to pick through that, Derek?
You know, one of my good friends has a great quote, and he said, choosing an agent is like choosing between five different bottled waters. You know what I mean? Because they all look the same. They probably all taste the same. You know what I mean? Are they the same? You know, I could say, I can make an argument they're not, you know? But you really just never know, you know? So all I can really do is just focus on what we do, you know, and hopefully we come across a little different. Sometimes, you know, agents push marketing. Sometimes agents will push, you know, their access and their connections. You know, for me, it's all about football. You know what I mean? I'll try to make sure that I communicate that. And then really, you know, I try to use social media as a platform to be the proof in the pudding. When I say, look, my guys are there and we're involved with, you know, the family aspect, and we're involved in everything they do on and off the field to help the community. I mean, hopefully people see it and see it's not just me putting up lip service. It's not just one guy. It's all my guys, you know, that we treat. You know, I think the best compliment I got one day was from one of my clients. And he's not a real high-profile guy, but his dad says, you make my son feel like he's your number one guy, and I appreciate that. And that's what I want to do. You know, I want everybody to, you know, it doesn't matter that they're not making a $95 million deal. I want everybody to feel like they're getting that type of level of service, and hopefully that will help distinguish between which bottle of water I am.
And we have a little bit less than 2 minutes. In this day and age where you have athletes expressing themselves socially, how does that factor in? How does that make your job harder to do?
You know, I try to let them express themselves as they will. We also communicate on what they do and what they try to put out. We try to make sure that, you know, they understand that they are their own brand. And just like this interview that's going to be in the archive, things you say, you know, are going to be out there forever. So make sure that you're, you know, putting your best foot forward. And, you know, not a lot of times the media doesn't always give them opportunity. Like they try to, focus on one negative thing. So we try to put out enough positive things so when people do see, if there is a mistake, we can, you know, say, look at the body of work.
We only have a minute left, but when you think back on your career as far as a coach, as far as representing athletes and playing on a national championship team, is there one moment that's kind of engraved in your mind, Derek?
I think, you know, every time you sign the first, every time you have a first rounder and he goes in the first round and being in the green room, there is nothing like it. I mean, championship games are awesome. I've been around a bunch of them, but there's just something about when that guy's name gets picked and you're standing right with his family and then, like, there's a sigh of relief. And even when a player gets picked late in the seventh round and then you just see the elation of your player just accomplishing that dream and you know you're a part of it and you know they have so much future ahead of them, there's nothing like it.
I want to thank you, Derek. This has been a very insightful interview. I appreciate it, and I think you represent the best in sports representation. Take care, my friend.
Thank you so much.
Again, Derek Gilmore is a successful and well-respected sports agent, CEO of Day One Sports and Entertainment. And he said, at the end of the day, I tell people I meet with that they'll soon be making their own money, that they're going to be their own man. People take advantage of these young players because they're hungry. They're thinking about the short term, and it's easy to entice someone when they're starving. Good quote from him. I'm Ron Barr. Good to have you with us. As we continue across the country and around the world, we've got you on America's sports talk show, Sports Byline.